Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
So here we go then, everybody. Welcome to another edition of the Kings of Anglia Itchers Town podcast, which is proudly sponsored by Ginger Pickle and Manscaped. As you can hear, it's not Heathy in the host chair. It's Roscoe once again. Hello, everybody. Hope you're doing very well. Another town win. Not a vintage performance, but another win. But do not worry. I am supervised by two fine gentlemen in Stuart Watson and Alex Jones as we discuss another win. Boys, it's good to have you on. Stu, let's go over to you, my friend. Great to have you back. You had half term off last week down in Devon. The question to you, my friend, did you eat as many pasties as I did in Bristol last week?
Well done for getting through the intro, Ross. I think that was about take 4 or 5. Yeah. We got there in the end. We got through a serious case of the giggles there this morning, but we made it. We made it through the intro, and I wasn't in Devon. I was in Cornwall. My wife would be, it's not the same, Ross. That'd be like saying Norfolk and Suffolk's the same. You wouldn't, you'd balk at that, wouldn't you? So they have very different ideas about which order the jam and the clotted cream goes on. I had a very nice week, thank you. And I didn't have a single pasty this time. I'm not quite sure why, but how were your pasties in Bristol?
I only had one, to be fair, so it wasn't that easy to beat. But it was nice. It was very nice. I ate it in my hotel room in Bristol, which was a lot of crumbs about. I tied it up. Don't worry. I did. I tied it up. But yeah, apologies to your wife and Stu about the Cornwall-Devon divide. I'll make sure to note that down for future things. AJ, great to have you on as always, my friends. Halloween season is in your household, as we found out on the last pod. Mm-hmm. How are you?
In the Halloween mood, I'm sure. Yeah. The cat has gone. I don't know where the cat has gone. The one that was above my head on the last pod where I was bringing my sleep deprivation on just after about an hour after getting back from Bristol. Now properly know what the Stuart Watson lifestyle is of getting to your hotel at, you know, midnight and then working through until the early hours of the morning on your takeaways and then getting up and travelling back. So I guess it's, I've done it a couple of times, but it's been a little while. Nice to get back into the routine of things with the Saturday games, but a lot of fixtures coming up. And yeah, I think that Stu will definitely be all the better for having that week off.
Yeah, indeed. Refreshed and ready to kick on. A lot of games heading into November, boys. But let's talk about another town win. We're going to hear from Kieran McKenna, first of all. And on the win himself. And then we'll get on to the first half and all that sort of bits and bobs. So let's bring out McKenna on the win. Let's do this.
Given another 3 goals for your side, another 3 points. But you were very much in a football match today, weren't you? And it pushed you all the way.
Yeah, they did. And that's what I expected, really, you know. I think you could see why both teams done so well last year. Two of the best teams, you know, maybe statistically in the division. You know, ever in League One, so you could see why it was you know, two such good teams. It was a hard fought game, of course, a big challenge for us when they score such a wonderful goal so early in the game, and we had to, you know, fight really hard for the points. So I think to come back from that position to be 3-1 up on 90 minutes, I think we've done a lot of things well. But of course there was other bits to improve, and that's natural. So yeah. Really tough game, didn't expect anything less. I'm really happy to have come out on top against them, having not managed to do it last season.
Stu, wasn't a vintage town performance. Where do you want to start with this game? You know, back at Portland Road after, feels like a lifetime ago. You know, we had the international break, then the extended international break, and we've, of course, had that away game at Bristol. Back at Portland Road, and yeah, where do you want to start, my friend?
Yeah, 3 weeks off from Portman Road, so it was certainly good to be back. And Yeah, I mean, a brief summary before we really dig into it. This was Ipswich not at their best, but still won the game, still scored three goals again. And it's quite often said that's a sign of a good side, a successful side, that you can find a way to win when you're not playing at your best. And that was certainly the case. We know Ipswich Town are a good side. You also have to have a little bit of luck along the way to do well in the Championship. And they certainly got a little bit of that at the weekend, rode their luck at times. I don't want to overplay that because Ipswich have had things go against them. They've had some Stonewall penalties not go in their favour. I think they've had more refereeing incidents go against them than for them over the last year or so. Kieran McKenna's been quick to sort of highlight that. But yeah, maybe they cashed in on a little bit of that at the weekend in getting this one over the line.
Yeah, definitely. Well, AJ, let's talk about the start of the game, because Town could have been 1-0 up in the early starts. George Hurst, oh, if he could have scored that chance, what a way it would have. Of course, we're getting our value for money at Portland Road, Town fans and us covering the games, because five goals again, goals galore. I think, Stu, you put a stat on your Twitter of like the amount of goals have been scored at Portland Road in the last whatever games it is. Find that stat. But yeah, AJ, what a chance for Hurst early doors in the game.
Yeah, I'm going to give it a go. Was it 23-7, Stu? Is that right? 23. Yep. I mean, that's fairly staggering numbers. Good chance for him early doors. Yeah, I think it kind of gets flicked over to him and he just needs to get a bit of power on it. And I think he's a striker that definitely needs luck on his side. I think he's fantastic in what he does and he's a really good all-round striker. And you look at the fact that he's been involved in six goals so far this season. That's three assists as well. And so much of his work is to do with kind of battling, making sure he provides assists, all those kind of things. So I think that he's maybe not kind of that clinical striker that maybe you expect from that big number nine, but was one where you've seen it a few times for them so far this season. You just thought, oh, I'll just get a little bit more on it. Like you think about the header there at Huddersfield, where he just needed to get the power on it. That goes in, it changes the complexion of the game. Probably would have been, well, at least could have been a similar story here, where if Town got that early goal, then you're into a position where it totally changes the dynamic. But obviously, went the other way in quite some fashion.
Yeah, Stu, do you want to talk about that? Decent strike from Whittaker. We know of his ability, and he's done well in League One. He's jumped up to the Championship, done well. But yeah, probably not a goal that Town will want to look back on fondly.
Yeah, had that Hurst goal gone in, it could have changed the complexion of the game. That was a nice little move, wasn't it? Classic Ipswich Town move up the left, cut back. Chaplin sort of helped it on. And yeah, if he just gets a little bit more, and Ipswich go 1-0 up inside 2 minutes, and we'd be talking about one of those barnstorming starts, Ipswich flying out the blocks, it not mattering about the teams changing ends, which we still need to dig into a little bit more, whether that was we had another case of the team swapping ends, not quite sure who won the toss, whether that was Plymouth mind games, whether it was tactical because of the sun from Morsi. But that didn't go in, and we didn't get that kind of, I think Alex turned to me and said, not quite the typical sort of Ipswich fast start that we've been used to here at Portman Road. And then that was compounded with Plymouth scoring a really good counter-attacking goal after 7 minutes. I think it was Morsi who gave the ball away. He wasn't the only one who had a sort of off day on the ball. Unusually sort of Ipswich giving the ball away a bit too much, and Plymouth have got that quality, star quality, to hurt you on the counter-attack, and that's what happened. The way sort of Whittaker stepped inside from the right and bent the ball into the far corner with his left foot sort of gave me flashbacks to January when Barley Mumba rescued that point deep into stoppage time from a pretty similar position at the same end of the field. Without the aid of a slight deflection this time, that was a real piece of quality from Whittaker. If you're being picky, could Ipswich have got to him a little bit better once he kind of steps inside Davis, who kind of just maybe overcooked his recovery run? Could Edmondson get there a bit quicker? Should there have been a holding midfielder there to cover a little bit more? I don't know. But sometimes you just have to hold your hands up and say, that's just a piece of quality. And from there, Ipswich find themselves, not for the first time this season, having to come from behind at Portman Road.
Yeah, and I'll take that point about them changing, you know, ends, because I think, yeah, Plymouth must have done that last season when they came to Portland Road, because I remember Wamba just scoring that same goal in that last minute equaliser. So yeah, maybe it was mind games for Plymouth. They know that Town's main stand is North Stand, so they want them to shoot their first half, and then second half is, you know, that way. So yeah, it could be, but something we will definitely look into, ladies and gentlemen, because I know it's happening a lot at Portland Road, and we'll find out if it's maybe a Sam Morsey thing sometimes, or it is mind games from the other team. AJ, where are you at then when we were 1-0 down? And, you know, it's early doors. It's, I think, my 6th or 7th minute. So still a lot of game to be played. But, yeah, where were you at in terms of that first half, you know, going as it did?
Frustrated by the way that Town struggled to fight back, because usually if they're pegged back, it's immediately, right, let's go back at this and make sure that we get the equaliser. And I don't think it was for lack of effort. I think it was for the lack of quality. And there was a fairly big kind of gap in the actual quality, which was frustrating when you look at what Plymouth were doing. You look at the goal that they scored and the attacks that they were having, and it felt that Town didn't have that spark. We've seen them cut teams to pieces when you look at what they did to Hull, what they did to Blackburn, what they did to Preston, just a handful of them. And it didn't seem to really work with this one. And it felt like a case where they ended up going in with quite strong tackles to try and turn the tide. And it was what they needed to do, because when you don't necessarily have the legs to go and cut teams to absolute pieces, as they have done, you need players like Brandon Williams, like Sam Morsey, like Luongo even, who were really going and getting stuck in. Morsey, as Stu said, not great on the ball, but he was the one that when things were going against Town was going to get stuck in with a tackle, make sure that if nothing else, they would get the ball forward and try and do something. It just wasn't coming off. And we talk about pieces of luck and needing a bit of fortune. Potentially, let's say they definitely got that really with the equalisers, I think pretty much as the first half stoppage time was being announced.
Yeah, and we'll get onto that shortly, because there's a lot of talking points on that one. But let's talk about the big one. The Fridge comes back in, of course, boys, for Cameron Burgess. He came on for the Hull City game, did well against Wolves as well. But Stu, let's talk about it, because it was a big talking point in that first half, just before the equaliser. Where are you with this situation?
Well, just on the selection of George Edmondson to start with, the first time around it was a surprise for that midweek Hull game when he suddenly came in for Cameron Burgess. But Kieran McKenna, as he always does, articulately outlined why that was, that he'd selected him that day against Hull because he felt that Liam Delap was one of the strongest runners in the league, and that he wanted maybe a bit more pace up against him rather than Cameron Burgess, who has been exceptional over the last 12 months, strong in the air. But if he's got one weakness, it's if you can get him on the turn slightly higher up the pitch. That made perfect sense, and we saw that play out that day against Hull. Probably would have been a similar theory with either whether it was Ryan Hardy who did in the end start, or whether it was Mustafa Bundu who came on in that first half because of an injury. They're pacing behind, and in Morgan Whittaker, they've got a good player out on that right hand side. So that was the thinking behind selecting George Edmondson. And I would say, on the whole, that kind of thinking paid off. I thought Edmondson had a decent game. I don't love him as the left-sided centre-half. I think he's a much better player on that right side, but that's how it is with Wolfenden kind of having that position. Beyond that one moment just before half-time, which we may as well speak about now, Ipswich, as we said, had a frustrating half, really. Worked lots of good positions. Amari Hutchinson looked to be the danger man. They were getting the ball to him a lot down the right-hand side, but was being sort of well shepherded. They dealt with him pretty well. Credit to Stephen Schumacher, who brought in Mikel Miller. Obviously, I think he knew that it was either going to be Hutchinson or Caden Jackson, so he brought in a sort of a fairly pacey left back to deal with him, and it worked. And Ipswich were kind of getting shunted down the sides, lots of corners, couldn't make much of them. Plymouth could have had a second when Whittaker put a shot straight at the goalkeeper. So there was a real sense of frustration heading towards those final minutes of the half. The crowd had just started to, who I thought, you know, responded really well to going but goal behind, but the atmosphere had just started to dip a little bit. And then Plymouth get this nice little breakaway on halfway. Bundu, as I said, who'd just come on. Edmondson gets the wrong side. He's always chasing, and as they reach the edge of the box, it's a bit of a desperate sort of lunge from behind, isn't it? And I don't know what you boys thought. If we're being honest, what was your initial reaction in the moment? Forget all the replays and the slow-mos and everything now. I think everybody thought, well, we could be in trouble here, didn't you, when that happened?
You know mine. I turned to you and said I thought it was a penalty. And in fairness, you were quite quick to say, I think it was just on the edge of the box and he falls in. And I've seen a couple of different angles of it. It's one of those where I think you can kind of... It's almost the same thing to when you look at VAR, is that you can slow down and look at different angles. They're just going to show you different things. And it's quite hard to kind of make your mind up on it. I've seen angles where it really looks like he's been brought down in the box. I've seen ones where, especially when you look at it full speed, it looks like he's kind of just been taken down on the edge. He falls in. You see angles where it looks really like it's almost like a last man challenge. Is it really? Probably not. So if it's a case where he doesn't get the ball and it doesn't really feel like it, it's probably a yellow card and a free kick. But again, there's such a wide variety of things that you can have from that. And Town, at the end of the day, got the best possible one. And again, it's a case of needing luck, but also, yeah, you make your own luck as well.
Yeah, I always go on kind of initial reaction and live talk. Quite often when you slow it down and you watch it back, things can look worse and look different. If I was a referee, I'd go quite a lot on sort of players' reactions at the time, because I think that can tell a story, and then the crowd's reaction. And I think if you get the wrong side as a centre-half like that, you have to... He may have got a sliver of the ball with his toe, but he doesn't change the direction of the ball. I think if you're going to come in from the wrong side, it's your duty. And I'm part of a centre-halves union here who loves a last-ditch tackle, as you know. I think you've got to get enough of the ball to kind of deviate the direction of the ball to make sure the referee knows that you've won it, because it's not really your right to win it once the striker's got himself between you and the ball. That said, it does look like he goes down quite softly. It looks like, which is bizarre, because, you know, you've got the goalkeeper to beat by that stage. It was weird the way he's kind of planted his foot. If Edmondson's touch of the ball is minimal, so is the touch on Bundu's ankle minimal as well. But live, in real time, it looked like a foul. I thought it was outside the box, and I did think the two covering defenders negated it being a kind of denying a goal-scoring opportunity red card. So free kick, yellow card would have been my view on it, I think, but for nothing to be given at all. You wouldn't be happy if it was the other way around, would you?
Have you seen the Plymouth commentators on this? It was going around on social media. I don't know if either of you have seen it, but there's quite a strong reaction from them. I can tell Ross has seen it, but I don't know if you can remember any of the specific lines from it. I can't really off the top of my head, but
I think that might be quite a northern commentator, isn't it?
I'm not 100% sure. I've seen it going around.
I think that might be another piece of commentary that's been dubbed over the top of that one, yeah.
Oh, that's somewhat gutter. I've seen it being kind of floated around. I can't believe it. It's like Mythbusters, this. But yeah, I saw that one going around. I definitely know that I don't think the Argyle fans were too impressed from that point on.
No, and Stephen Schumacher wasn't impressed either. He came in and said he was fuming about that. To be fair to him, he did say, you know, I'm not 100% sure whether it was a penalty or a red. It could have been, it might not have been. I don't want to see players sent off, but he felt it was a huge turning point in the game. Ipswich go and score soon after that, he points out, and George Edmondson in the second half does get booked, which for me, I thought was quite soft. I thought he won the ball with that one, but argues that, you know, he would have been off then. That's an if, buts, and maybe. George Edmondson probably doesn't make that tackle if he's on a yellow card already. But he wasn't happy about that one because he knows his side had executed the game plan to perfection in that first half, had scored the early goal, had frustrated Ipswich. They were so close to getting into half-time ahead. Possibly could have been more, depending on how that scenario had played out, but they didn't, and it ended up being 1-1.
Yeah, and yeah, I will admit, when I saw it in real time, I thought, oh dear, George is in trouble here. From my view, I was like, oh no. And I turned around to another photographer and went, how is that not?
It was one of those, wasn't it? Because we had Shawnee Aluko in front of us with the analysis team. And, you know, Alex and I obviously kind of went, oh, made the sort of noises you do. And then Shawnee Aluko sort of turned around and puffed his cheeks out and raised his eyebrows as if to say, oh, might have got away with one there. It was, I think everyone in the ground probably turned to whoever they were with and had that sort of reaction at that moment.
While you had Steven Schumacher on the touchline, just fuming, just go, what? You know, speaking to everyone he could find, and even like looking at McKenna and go, how is that not? But, you know, it wasn't. And that turned the tide a little bit because we got the equaliser, as Stu mentioned. And at a time, we didn't know who scored it because there was a lot of different voices getting sort of said about, was it Massimo Luongo's goal? That was on the tannoy. I think the club put Sam Morsi's gif out there. But it was Bali Mumba, the former Norwich man, scoring the own goal. AJ, that was a moment of just chaos in that box, but it was Massimo, a little back heel, and then boom.
Can I just say that I've had quite a few moments where I've mistaken Massimo Luongo and Sam Morsi, and I've tried to like argue my case to people, and I finally now got the perfect example where I thought it was quite clearly the Luongo's back heel, and the club went with Morsi. I was like, oh, this is fine now. I finally got an argument to make my case of me getting totally confused. It happened all the time. It even happened at Bristol City where, do you remember when Morsi smacked the post? I was like, oh, such a good shot from Luongo. Then I had to quickly go back and change the live blog. And I've had that a few times this season, but I will get there. This was chaos. We kind of, no one seemed to see it. There were overall in the press box, I think we were turning to about three or four different people and asking what went on. And strangely, nobody saw it. I think I was writing something. I think Stu was writing something. And all we see is a bit of a mad scramble in the box. I think Stu just about spots the back heel and then it kind of just deflects in. And it was a really bizarre goal. Watching it back. So let's see if I can get this right. I think it's, the corner comes in, bit of the scramble there. And it's Luongo's back heel that ends up deflecting kind of from an on-rushing Mumba. Seen a couple of angles where it looks like Cooper spills it. I think it's just diverted past him, wrong foot's him. Chaos, chaotic goal. But again, when you don't have the quality, really, when you can see that the players are feeling it in the legs and they're struggling in those kind of games, that's really the moments that you need. And as you said, a defining moment in the game.
And Stu, perfect timing, just going into half time, as the cliche goes. I was once again, just like the Edmondson thing, I was looking at other photographers like, do you know what happened? Do you know what happened? What happened? Who's got the goal? Yeah. Who's got the goal? But yeah, it was Mumba, of course, scored the late equaliser last time out, and he's now scored the own goal.
Yeah, I think we were sort of going, well, I thought the rule was if the shot's on target, you know, the goal gets given to, because they'd rather have people, attacking players, being credited with goals rather than own goals. And it's certainly on target because it's straight down the throat of Cooper, unless Bali Mumba instinctively kind of flings himself in the way. It looks almost sort of comical in the end. You'd be saying, great finish, great bit of instinctive centre-forwards play if it was one of your own players. But it did add to a little bit of schadenfreude that it was A, ex-Norwich, and B, someone who'd been a bit of a nemesis for Ipswich last season, scoring in both those games. Back heel, almost watching it back, it's almost like a donkey kick, isn't it? He sort of takes one touch and then really, it's not just sort of a clean little stab back heel. He really has to fling, inventive sort of flinging of his leg backwards to get that ball going towards the goal. So quick thinking from Massimo. And yeah, if Ipswich were going to score in that first half, it was going to be from one of those corners. I think that was the ninth corner of the half. Hadn't made enough of them. Up until that point, we've been talking about them being a real threat from set pieces and adding that to their armoury under McKenna. They weren't really coming off up until that point. So, completely changed, I would imagine, the mood in both dressing rooms, if not the team talks. Steven Schumacher said that it did affect his players at half-time. They would have come in feeling pretty good about themselves. That would have been a pretty simple, keep it going as you were. All of a sudden, I think maybe a few heads got lost in that dressing room, and a big chunk of that half time would have been trying to sort of refocus his players, whereas Ipswich could kind of, you know, think, actually, yeah, we've got away with one to be level here at half time, and we're able to kind of go out and regroup and go again.
The corners were slightly strange, I thought, because they were really going short a lot, and it felt so easy for Plymouth to kind of just narrow down the angles and pick them off. And that was really frustrating because they had so many of them. And as you said, they've been such a threat. And to do that, it just felt like they were wasting so many chances with that. And there were quite a few bits in that first half. They were going quite direct to Hurst at times, which is something that's worked because he's very good at, you know, being that physical striker, winning the knockdowns, setting up the counter-attacks. He was getting caught offside quite a lot, and he was really getting marked out of the game at times. And it was really, yeah, you could see where things weren't going right. Obviously, it's a lot harder when you're on the pitch to notice that. And I think that potentially it was quite a simple fix where, I mean, I spoke to Leif Davis after the game, and I know we'll hear from that interview in a bit, but he was saying all we did is we went in at half time. The manager got these things up on the screen and went, you can go here, 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 and here. And that's how you're going to be able to get through them. And as I'm sure we'll touch on in a second, that's exactly what they went and did after the break.
Half time, I went downstairs and I saw Kieran Dyer, who was great to see him back at Portman Road looking so well again after his recent operation. And chatting to him about the game. He'd been in the director's box and he said Nathan Broadhead started to work this out. He started to work out that the space is inside because Plymouth had gone from quite an attacking formation. They'd gone with sort of one holding player. Really, I think there was a bit of confusion from Plymouth fans to see Houghton, who normally is one of kind of two sitters, had dropped out of the team, and they played Finn Azaz and Kundal as kind of two more advanced midfielders. And I guess their plan was to smother Morsi and Luongo and stop Ipswich's engine room working, and that had kind of worked. But Broadhead had, who always plays pretty narrow anyway, but I thought came especially narrow in this game, and started to realise that that was the area that Ipswich could hurt them. There was a few times where then the outball to Davis wasn't used, and I think that's something that they realised in the second half. It didn't have to all go through Hutchinson, and they started to utilise that left side a little bit more.
Definitely. Did anybody see Broadhead's celebration when Massimo's goal? He was like, just love that from him. I think Broadhead just loves seeing goals go, and of course, especially his goals. But I just love that little clip there, you know, just him going, yeah! Which is great. Good old Broadhead. But yeah, shall we talk about the Town going in front? Another fast start for Town. And yeah, what a ball from Leif Davis. Just does Leif Davis things, doesn't he? Just pings over. Hurst had a lot of work to do there. AJ Hurst, but good finish, good ball, 2-1 Town.
Came about maybe 15 seconds after I was readying a tweet to criticise him, and I felt a little bit bad doing it because you don't criticise Leif Davis, he will make you pay. And I didn't tweet it in the end because the goal went in just as I was finishing it off, and it came after...
What are you going to say?
At the end of the day, the first half I thought was a little bit shaky in terms of A, his defensive side, and B, some of the passing. And the tweet was actually going to come after a really big chance for Plymouth, where it all comes from a back pass from him that was just so weak, undercooked, and really poor. And it's just not what you come to expect from him. Even on his worst days, and we can say this about Town in general, but even on his worst days, if he's able to come up with quality like that, my word. Given a little bit too much space down the left, but you do that and you're going to pay the price. It's a lovely kind of curled ball. Just realise that at the end of the day, you know, going inside and trying to play a counter through the middle, try and be slow and methodical, this wasn't going to work when you could see the space down the left and you knew that you could clip the ball, beat the man and play Hurst into space. And then from there, yeah, definitely wasn't a case where it was kind of an easy tap-in, for example. He still had to make the run, still had to kind of make sure that the defender didn't close him down. The finish is superb. I think one of those where you look at it and think, oh, it's fairly easy because he's just been played through on goal. Not at all. You really have to give credit to what Hurst did here, because to get A, the power on it, really, really heavy hit, and B, to make sure that it goes into the opposite corner, that was a really special strike from someone where, yeah, as we kind of touched on, he doesn't always get things right in the perfect moments. I don't think he's that ruthless clinical striker, but when he does some special goals. We saw it against Sunderland, for example, the way that he got played in space, just needed that one chance, bang, goal. Took two chances really today, but over the weekend, and with that was one hell of a finish.
Yes, Stu, thoughts on the goal, my friend? What a finish.
No doubt about it. Leif Davis had been having a bit of a stinker up to that point. As I say, I think first half defensively wasn't at his best, as Alex said. In second half, there was a couple of moments where the crowd started to groan when he gave the ball away. Unforced errors. But then it's a Tones with an outstanding assist. We're used to seeing him very high up the pitch and cutting the ball back. This time it's from a lot deeper position and he's just bent the ball up that left-hand channel. I don't think Dan Scar will be too happy watching that one back. He should really cut that one out. But once he doesn't, Hurst is there on the last shoulder, running in behind as he does. Cool clinical finish beyond Michael Cooper. And Ipswich needed that goal at the start of the second half. Suddenly, from a bit of frustration, only what 20 minutes beforehand, heading towards half time, just shows you how quickly things can change. An incident goes Ipswich's way, scrambled equaliser just before half time, and then not the best of starts to the second half, but they found themselves 2-1 up.
Yes, and we're going to hear from McKenna now about Plymouth's chances. And McKenna's not happy with his team. Let's hear what he's got to say about that.
The bits to improve you refer to, is that defensively today, too many chances conceded? You needed your goalkeeper to come up with some big saves again towards the end?
Yeah, I think that's fair to say. I didn't love a right of possession game today, really, in any phase, really. Certainly something to improve on. And look, we've maybe 6 clean sheets in the league this season, so we can defend well individually and as a team, but we give up too many chances today. So certainly things to learn, things to improve on, and look, that's natural. We're a newly promoted team in the division. We're winning most of our games. If we didn't have any things to improve in the performance, there'd be, be no point coming in on Monday. We might as well just turn up for Fulham. That's a positive. We'll take a lot from today against a good team who tested us in different ways. In a game that came really quickly off the back of a tough away trip on Wednesday, there'll be lots that we can learn from today. And it's normal that we're not going to deliver perfect performances every week. That's the bit that we can really get our teeth into.
Yeah, I think McKenna wouldn't have a job if he didn't need to turn up on Monday. Just turn up and, just do whatever you want to do, basically. Should we praise the man who is just undroppable at the moment, and that is this man?
Václav Smooth.
No, that is not.
What's that?
Václav Hladký.
That's the one.
Don't know. Did I call him Václav Smooth?
That was the translation for Slovakian to English, but he's not Slovakian, he's Czech. I don't know where that came from. But shall we talk about him though, boys? Because he had to make some super saves. Stu.
Why don't you just call him Václav Smooth now, from now on? I mean, it was a smooth performance. I don't know if that's a clunky segue into this, but isn't it amazing that only a few weeks ago we were talking about, it was a good, big decision here. What would you do? Let's start making a vote as whether Walton comes back in, or whether Vaz keeps his place. That's not even up for debate now, is it? He has been Ipswich's, probably over the piece, Ipswich's best player, if you were sort of doing a player of the season vote right now. Let's not gloss over the ball at feet part of this as well. He's clipping passes into fullbacks. He's doing all that great stuff with the ball at his feet, which we shouldn't take for granted. We sometimes overlook that. I think he's improved aerially as well. There were some nice strong punches through traffic, and dealt with some of that side of things. And then to cap it off, big saves at big moments. After it had gone 2-1 up, Plymouth really came at Ipswich in those latter stages, and several good saves. The highlight of which was two, really. One's a one-handed stop from a firm back post, Dan Scar towering header back across goal at a corner, and he goes with sort of his, not his wrong hand, but his hand over the top to sort of claw the ball away. That was a really good save. And then moments later, ball deflects nicely into the path of Joe Edwards in the box after Plymouth had cut Ipswich open. And quick off his line, stays big, almost Schmeichel-esque to kind of that starfish shape. Turns his knee inside and keeps the ball out with his legs. And got a standing ovation, rightly so. He has contributed to a significant number of these points that Ipswich have got on the board this season.
Yeah, Mr. Smooth. That's his new name then, AJ. I know we talk about it. I feel like it's every week. There's a segment now on Vaz because he just brings up these saves week in, week out. And he's, as Stu said, he's, you know, saved us a lot of points this season.
I think he's been the best goalkeeper in the Championship so far this season. I think that might be high praise, but you look at the stat that's going to define that is going to be goals prevented. He was top of the division going into the international break. Obviously, I think it's Hermansson who was kind of up with him, but still away behind. I hadn't checked recently to see what the numbers are there. Look at the Joe Edwards shot that Stu mentioned that had an XG of 0.69. That is absolutely huge in terms of how likely that was going to be to go into the back of the net. So add that on to what he's already done, and he's absolutely saving Town's bacon here. And I think there maybe is a side to that where you think, wow, if you've got to think maybe towards the defensive side, he probably needs a little bit more cover as well. You know, with goals flying in at Portland Road and he's still making these kind of defining saves. We've obviously spoken about the goals that have been let in at Portman Road as potentially a bit of a concern. If he can have a little bit more cover, then I think that Town can become a really strong defensive side, because you've then got a goalkeeper you know can, when called upon, prevent almost definite goals while also having the players in front of him that can just kind of limit the opportunities there. It all seems to fall into place, and he's been absolutely excellent so far. There's no doubting that he's, in terms of individual action, he's been the biggest reason as to why Town are where they are in the league.
And he's deserving it, isn't he? You know, for him to step up and come into this. And yeah, big shout out to Vaz. A lot of people have said to me now, you're going to have to now learn, Ross, how to say his name properly. But as we now know, it's Vaslav Smooth. So there we go, boys.
I would say he's played his part. Ipswich wouldn't have as many points on the board as they do without him, but the reason they are where they are is because of the goals that they score, and they've ultimately scored 3 goals in this match again at home. And people keep saying, is this sustainable? Well, if you've got the goal threat that Ipswich have got, then why is it not sustainable? They scored 3 in this game. They could have had more as well. Hutchinson had a good chance where he chopped back in the box and saw a shot deflected just wide. Hurst's big opportunity early on in this game. It's the goals that Ipswich are scoring that's put them where they are, because you know that if you do have the odd off day where you concede, you can still outscore teams. And McKenna's right to point out they still have had 6 clean sheets this season. They can defend, they can keep goals out. Slightly sort of intriguing, weird stat that the clean sheets are happening more away from home. They're getting a lot of these 1-0s away from home and the goal fests at Portman Road. So I've seen a lot of opposition sort of fans and maybe some Ipswich fans as well questioning, is this sustainable? Why not? I think Ipswich have shown they can do both sides of their game. This isn't just been a sort of a flash in the pan scoring these goals. This has been happening for 10 months now. We're averaging sort of 3 goals a game, I would say, at Portman Road. It must work out at now. So when you've got the belief that you can score those goals, then you know, it doesn't you can play that sort of brave open brand of football, and you might leak 1 or 2 at times.
I like it. I want goals, and it also helps my hot take for every goal in every game. So keep doing what you're doing, Town. Just keep scoring. Keep clean sheets away from home. That's not too bad. But yeah, keep scoring. And we're spreading the goals about as well, aren't we, boys? Because we had 3 different goal scorers on the weekend. Obviously, the other one was an own goal, but Massa will probably want to claim it still. But yeah, the substitutions helped again, AJ. You know, 5 of them. Let's talk about them, because Jack Taylor came on for Massimo. Kane Jackson came on for Amari. Harry Clark came on for Connor Chaplin. Marcus Arnas came on for Broadhead. And Scarlett came on for Hurst. Yeah, thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think with three of them, with Jackson and with Scarlett, it was always going to be a tough game for them to come into, given the position that Town were in. They were kind of the later subs there. Scarlett especially, I feel a little bit bad for him because I know he's kind of had a little bit of flack there. And it's important to look at the times he's been brought on at, and often it's been when Town are trying to see out wins or they're already in a comfortable position. He's not going to have loads of time on the ball. I think if you added his total touches on the pitch, this might be one to have a look at, but his total touches on the pitch since joining Town, you're probably going to be under maybe 60, I'd say, in total. I think he had maybe 7 over the weekend, and that seems to be quite a recurring theme with him. So he will get a chance, and that's when you need to then judge him, but I wouldn't kind of jump to any conclusions with him at the moment. The two standouts were obviously the ones who came on first. I thought Taylor was really good coming on, a nice composed figure in midfield, just when they needed someone to link up play and also to help in terms of transitioning on the counter. Really, really important. Marcus Harness, every single time, fantastic. He's just the ultimate super sub. And he's not kind of that, well, let's say he's not that kind of Caden Jackson player where you bring him on and he has searing pace and he gives tired opposition fullbacks absolute nightmares. But he's such a kind of, he's really, really good at dribbling for starters. The way that he can take on players, not necessarily with, again, this searing pace, but with a lot of skill, beat his man, make sure that he slows down play when it needs to be. And he gets into the right positions. He's a very, very intelligent footballer. He's a versatile footballer. He's everything that you want to have off the bench. And for someone that we spoke about as potentially maybe a bit of an expendable player in the squad in terms of could he be shifted to bring in someone else in terms of the squad numbers, I think that he's pretty much as valuable as anyone in that kind of first choice 11.
There's a lot of love for Harness with his goal to make it 3-1 for Town, Stu. You know, a lot of love for McKenna, for all the players. I think all the players did their normal quotes and things on Instagram, you know, saying, oh, this so happy for this lad scoring the goal. Maybe they didn't say lad because that's not a Sam Morsey thing. So, yeah, I don't know why I said that. But, yeah, a lot of love for Harness because, yeah, he's stepping up and he's scoring some goals now, isn't he?
He is, yeah, and he was one back in the summer that myself and a lot of people thought might have been in danger of leaving. Said that before, you were looking at the players that were competing for those forward positions, and he looked well down the pecking order. But there was a reason that he featured in virtually every game last season for Ipswich, either as a starter or even after Broadhead arrived, he was always getting minutes off the bench. And yeah, in his first real proper season at Championship level, he's playing his part as a man off the bench. As Plymouth were kind of pushing for that equaliser after Vaz had made those saves, left some gaps at the back, and it was a Sam Morsey kind of driving run through the middle of the pitch. Leif Davis, who never seems to tire, sort of with the overlapping run. Yeah, trademark Ipswich goal cut back into the box. I think a left foot shot blocked straight back to him, just passes it in with his right foot. And what was that, 86 minutes? We've been talking a lot about reactions to moments in the game. That was a kind of, phew, relief. That should be done, you know. And it wasn't quite, as it turned out. That 3-1, having that should really have sort of taken the sting out of Plymouth, and then Ipswich should have just sort of game controlled and managed that out to a quite comfortable conclusion. But such had been the nature of the way Plymouth had played, the way Ipswich had maybe looked a little bit fatigued, just off the boil for whatever reason that is, whether they'd lost a bit of sharpness over that extended break, whether the sort of the midweek trip to Bristol clinging on at the end there, the long journey back had all fed into it. It didn't have its same, the whole performance in general, but, you know, those last 5 minutes didn't have that usual kind of calm, confident control about Ipswich. But thankfully, they did just have just enough to get it over the line.
Yeah, just enough. But AJ, squeaky bum time in stoppage time as Plymouth got a goal back by Joe Edwards, their skipper. And yeah. Where were you at when that went in? Did you feel, oh, this could be, yeah, it's going to be difficult to maybe to win this game if Plymouth, they're going to keep going?
I didn't, when the goal went in, I was more frustrated that I'd kind of got everything sorted on the report. And I was like, oh, no, not again. To do more of the, that's always the journalist's nightmare, is any sort of stoppage time goals and you've got everything formatted. It's a bit frustrating. But yeah, I think it was more, I didn't really expect that kind of strong reaction from Argyle, which was maybe a little bit naive, to be honest. I think Town probably did, because they were the ones on the pitch who saw how strong and determined that they were. And I think that there's a lot of similarities between the two teams in terms of the fact that they're not going to kind of lay down and die. I think that even if they were a couple of goals behind at that point, they'd still be fighting, knowing that all it would take would be two quick counters with quality and they'd be right back in it. So definitely felt that towards the end. And it's probably the first time really that we've felt that in terms of, well, you have the Bristol City game, definitely there to an extent with the way that they pushed. But even then, I thought that Town's game management, albeit that it was made hard, it was pretty good. McKenna likened that one to the Sunderland game at the start of the season. Similar kind of thing in a lot of ways. But again, you felt that there was a lot of composure there to see it out. This didn't really have that same feeling, as Stu said, that there was a bit of caginess there. And you could kind of sense that if they had maybe a couple more minutes, that Argyle would have had the time to turn the screw. But given kind of the external factors going on with it, I don't necessarily think it's anything too concerning. And when you look at it in the grand scheme of the season, it's not a massive worry when you look at how they've been grinding out these results in the last few weeks.
McKenna wasn't happy with that second Plymouth goal at all. Not acceptable. You don't often hear him talking in those sort of with that sort of strength about goals. And he did have a sort of slightly, I don't know how I'd describe his demeanour in that post-match. He didn't quite have his usual kind of upbeat, smiley self. I think he knows that there's quite a few things to iron out from that performance. And he wasn't happy. Again, he talked about, I didn't like anything about us out of possession in that game. The second goal against was unacceptable. And then they were trying to do the right things with game management, people like Jackson kind of taking it to the corner, but it all felt a little bit tentative and nervy, and trying to do the right things, but wasn't done with kind of an air of confidence when the ball was being taken to the corner. And yeah, when that goal went in, I think probably most people in the ground went, did you see how many minutes went up for stoppage time? I'd kind of missed the moment the board went up. I don't know if they'd read it out by that point, but that was 90 plus one when the goal went in. There were 6 minutes added on. There wasn't one last chance for Plymouth, thankfully. But yeah, it did bring back sort of memories, I think a few people have said, of that Charlton game of the 4-4.
Same weekend as well.
Was it? There you go. So maybe that's a marker that Ipswich have sort of progressed from there, and they are able, even when they're not feeling sort of on top of it, that they can still see it out. So look, the overall takeaway from this is, as we've said at the very start, far from at their best, but yet still scored three goals and got 3 points, and you know, finished off a perfect week and a perfect month.
Indeed. And as you mentioned, Stu, earlier, about the phrase that puts out there, sign of a good team is being able to win when they're not at their best. And that's what Town was. Let's hear
from Luke. Huh? I said that.
I know, that's what I said. That's what I wanted to repeat it. That's a good phrase. Just wanted to say it again. But let's hear from Lee Davis. AJ, you spoke to him. Let's see what he had to say about the win and getting one over Argyle.
Leith, it feels like Town maybe don't do normal wins at Portman Roads. Goals galore every time.
Yeah, it's good. Good game to be a part of today. I think last year we want obviously get a one over and them kind of thing. Since they obviously scored the last minute equaliser against us at home, and obviously beat us away at their place. So it felt good to get the 3 points and help get the three goals as well.
Yeah, obviously maybe not the ideal way to start. You would have known a lot about Plymouth. You've been involved in these games before, and I guess it wasn't going to be a massive surprise they came on to you in the way that they did at the start.
Yeah, they are a good team. That's why they came up with us as well. They've got some very good players. As you see in early doors, they went 1-0 up with a great finish. But yeah, they're a good team. They're a very good team, but I think we weren't at our best in the first half as well, I don't think. But we still created a lot of chances, which we should have been obviously ahead a bit more. But yeah, it's at the end of the day, we got the 3 points, no matter however it was.
There we go, Leif Davis. Didn't have the best game, but still got some assists, didn't he? And yeah, 3 points in the bag. And Stu, 50 league wins now under Kieran McKenna in just 82 games. What a stat that is.
Yeah, it's remarkable, isn't it? I think I'm getting a bit blasé about sort of all these wins coming and how good these stats are. It feels like we went through a sort of a period of kind of furiously digging out all these record-breaking stats. And I bumped into somebody at the gym this morning who was an Ipswich fan, just said, oh, me and my mate said to each other, oh, it's almost getting a bit boring now, just winning every game. And I hope that attitude, I can see where people are coming from, but people can't get too sort of blasé about this. This is really, really special, and you've got to soak up everything about this, because this calendar year has just been, to use a Mick McCarthyism, bonkers, hasn't it? It's what did you say? 50 wins, 50 league wins in 89 games, 82 games, which is faster than Robson, Ramsey, the lot. Crazy. I don't really know what more we can say about it, really.
Yeah, just put on this repeat, you know, just repeat, aren't we, AJ? You know, you must be enjoying this, my friend. You know, what a time to, you know, come in for your first season, and yeah, these wins keep on happening.
Do you ever think about, let's say, in terms of defeats that I've seen for Town since I've come in, so I joined in kind of July time, and I've seen in pre-season we saw two on the same day. That was horrible. And then we've seen none in the Carabao Cup, and we've seen one in the league. So overall, since I've come in, I've seen three defeats. Two of those are in pre-season. Draws, maybe three or four off the top of my head. The Luton game, Werder Bremen, Huddersfield. I guess we have to count Reading in that. So that's a fairly remarkable record. Adding in then, you know, the way that they performed in pre-season. I know that it kind of gets brushed under the carpet a bit, but you've got to bear in mind that was still a rusty side that wasn't maybe taking the game as seriously. And look at
the cup winners,
boy. Exactly. But they still went and they came up against a very strong RB Leipzig side towards the end of that, and they were winning those kinds of games as well. Winning breeds confidence, and they keep doing it, and they keep building this cushion up. I know that, you know, let's not go too crazy on the league table, but when you look at how things are at the moment, you look at the game in hand, all those kind of things, there's just so much positivity, isn't there?
There is. Stu, any other business from the game itself? You know, another packed crowd, which is what it is, Bourne Road. It's just every game is going to be packed.
Again, yeah, taking that for granted, aren't we? 29,000. Yeah, 29,000 again. I was going through some... up behind me here, I've got this big old box here. Was when we left our office many, many months ago, and it's got loads of old newspaper cuttings. And there was a headline on there from about, I can't remember, it was around 2014, I think, saying about time to lure back the 10,000, the missing 10,000 from Portman Road that had dwindled away. And they've certainly done that, haven't they? It's a hottest ticket in town. I've got those. It's worth just reading them out, isn't it? 3-4 against Leeds, 3-2 against Cardiff, 4-3 Blackburn, 3-2 Wolves, 3-0 Hull, 4-2 Preston, 3-2 Plymouth. That is the last seven games at Portman Road. It is the place to be right now. Other notes from the game, I think a few people have kind of pointed out that maybe the last couple of games have reminded people of the importance of Wes Burns to this team and the role that he has in it. Jackson starts against Bristol City. Hutchison starts in this game. Both good players who have a lot to give to this team. But the bespoke nature of this formation with Wes Burns playing high and right, maybe we underestimate what he does defensively. Someone who has played right back in the past, right wing back, does that defensive work, gets back, wins headers from crossfield balls. Is on that sort of wavelength with the cutbacks and everything with Connor Chaplin. you know, we've praised Jackson and Hutchinson a lot, but Wes Burns is the, you know, is an integral part of this side. And maybe a bit like when Sam Morsy was out of the team at Huddersfield, it's you only really sort of notice that when they're not in the side. So that's probably something to point out from this one. But yeah, I think ultimately it's just one that they'll be relieved that they've kind of got the win from. And as Leif Davis says, it's one that I think they had a little bit of extra motivation going into this one. We've talked about McKenna's little mind games, almost sort of Michael Jordan-esque, just finding little ways to kind of get yourself up for certain scenarios, whether it's, you know, I think he's done that, referenced that a lot, like Sheffield Wednesday, where we haven't been able to beat them yet the last year or so. So we need to win this one as a little bit of a progress marker. And I think similar was said again about Plymouth, not just because of the two games where you remember really played quite well, should have killed them off down at Home Park, conceded a couple of late goals from outside the box. Then Christian Walton has a header tipped onto the bar late on, the home game here with Barley Mumba's late goal. And then obviously Plymouth going on to pip Ipswich to the title. I think all kind of fed into, as Leif Davis says, them wanting to get one over Plymouth at the weekend.
And Sheffield Wednesday won a game, which was rare to see. Fair play to the Owls. AJ, any other business from you from the game? League table was looking interesting.
Yeah, I mean, the league table is the interesting bit, I suppose. Yeah, when you look at the gap that they have, it's still 9 points. I think that there are four teams that look like they're the strong ones, and it's Town and the three teams who came down from the Premier League last season, which for starters is absolutely baffling. Three who came down and one who came up. There's an interesting tweet that I saw from Wilty 1969-1. Obviously, Wilty 1969 was taken, so fair enough. Who kind of went through and did the maths on this, working on the assumption that 92 points gets us automatics. We only need 58 points from 33 games. That's 1.76 points per game. Town are currently averaging 2.62, which means that a run of 17 wins, 7 draws, 9 defeats would get them to the 92 points. With Leeds projected to get 82 points, that would then just mean 13 wins, 10 draws, 10 defeats. You can do the numbers till the cows come home, to be honest. But I think that, again, they all kind of point towards one direction, which is the fact that Town have gotten themselves into one hell of a position at the moment, in the sense that they've got the buffer there. And that's what they need to kind of maintain and keep going, because they will have tough runs. Everyone, as we kind of spoke about before, everyone looks at December. I think it's also important to look at some of the games next year where they have a lot of travelling to do, and there will be points where they find things hard. And if they can maintain this cushion, then you're still challenging everyone else every single week. Come on. Come cut the gap. Come do it. At the moment, that's not an issue because Town keep winning their games. So for now, That's the biggest priority, I think.
I think there might be a bit of an attitude. I think, what's the phrase you used in a preview recently? The, what is it, in the tree?
Elephant in a tree. Everyone's stood around waiting for it to fall. They all think it's going to fall. They all know it's going to fall. And it's just waiting for it to happen.
Yeah, I think I heard that with Arsenal. It was gone. Everyone wondering how the elephant got there in the first place. And they're waiting for it to fall out. And there might be an element of that. There'll be a different mindset this season. Ipswich were there with the team to be shot at, and teams coming and parking the bus, and there was an expectation that they should be up there. This time it's kind of flipped on its head a little bit, and certainly you're seeing sort of fans of people like Leeds and Southampton going, oh, they won't be able to keep it up. And maybe they'll be able to kind of channel some of that, what Plymouth had last year. You know, that was the knock on Plymouth second half. Oh, they won't be able to maintain it. Oh, Cooper keeps them in most of the games. A bit like the conversation we're having now. That's not sustainable. They won't keep coming from behind to win games. They won't be able to keep outscoring teams at home. And Plymouth did. They just refused to go away. And I think the reaction from Ipswich fans at the end of last season was just relief that they're finally back up. I don't think anyone was that bothered that Plymouth had beaten them to the title, and fair play. But I think that does rankle with a few of Plymouth fans still, that, you know, all of the plaudits were Ipswich are the best team League One has ever seen. And you'd probably feel the same, thinking, well, hang on a minute, we won the league. So all of that went into the game at the weekend, and maybe Ipswich need to channel some of what Plymouth had last season, that sort of almost underdog spirit. They might need to sort of talk that up a little bit as teams maybe, because I think teams will adapt now. I think they'll start to maybe show a little bit more respect, certainly when they come to Portman Road. So there'll be a few different puzzles for Ipswich to sort out. We talked about at Titan, you know, they missed Morsi at Huddersfield, missed Burns a little bit in the last couple of games. You know, it only takes an injury or two to change the dynamic. Can this kind of style of play be as effective when the pitches start getting a bit heavier? Things like that. So there's a few questions and challenges ahead for Ipswich, but the bottom line, as Alex said, is the platform is there now. They've given themselves a cushion, and it's hard not to look at the table from last season and go, I think Middlesbrough lost 15 games last season and finished fourth. So it tells you sort of what the margin of error is that you can finish in that top six. And we're not really in the early stages anymore, are we? We're a quarter of the way into the season. So, yeah, it's looking good, boys.
Looking good indeed. Well, in October as well, 4 wins out of 4. Of course, we had the Rotherham game in there as well, but we won't get onto that, boys. We won't get into that. That's still very raw, that. But shall we talk quickly about the championship as a whole? We saw two managers get sacked, and now Kieran McKenna is now the fourth longest-serving manager in the division, which is madness. Mark Robbins is the longest-serving with 6 years, 7 months. Steven Schumacher is the second longest with 1 year and 10 months and 23 days. Ron Lowe is 1 year, 10 months and 23 days. And Kieran McKenna is 1 year, 10 months and 10 days as of this piece I'm looking at. So, which is just, it's mad, AJ. It's just mad. Who got sacked over the weekend? Of course, Gareth Ainsworth did at QPR and Nigel Pearson at Bristol City. But yeah, it's sacking season, my friend.
It's mental to think that Mark Robbins is the only manager to have been championship club for more than 2 years. That is probably the standout from that. Ainsworth was one that was coming. I think we were fairly astonished it took as long as it did. But with the connections that he has at QPR, maybe not a surprise. And I think it, again, one of those where fans were desperate for him to leave, but he leaves with a sense of he is a good guy. Potentially a slightly strange guy, as we've seen with... We all remember the video. Yeah. Ross knows that this is why you subscribe to the video, guys. You get to see Ross doing the dance. That was baffling. I think that he's definitely one where you look at the talent that QPR have, and they should be nowhere near the relegation zone. Ilias Chair, you look at Armstrong, you look at Willock, for example. They've got a fairly impressive back line, things like that. Bristol City, with Pearson, one that I think we kind of seen coming, and I think some of the comments that he'd made to the press going into the game against Town in terms of, I've had no guarantees about my position here in terms of his contract, probably spoke volumes of the way that was going. I think he's done a really good job, and it's an exciting one for someone to take on because they've got a really, really young squad. So if there's someone who can kind of harness the potential that they have there, look at someone like Sam Bell, who caused Town huge amounts of issues, and kind of developing players like that in a club that has a really nice kind of infrastructure around it and a nice stadium and a high ceiling. That's definitely a big job. But for Pearson, I think one where it comes as a surprise in terms of, well, I assume it's a sacking, but given their performances and their league position, not really to be expected. But obviously he's got quite a lot of health issues there. In terms of the back issue, where he's been on crutches and neurological issue he was talking about going into the Town game. So interesting to see who comes in with both of those. I think QPR are going to go for Neil Warnock as the one that's being touted because he just can't stay away. A few names linked with Bristol City. I think Dean Holden is the one that, I think he's been there before in terms of a brief spell, but he's the one who's been linked. Interesting to see Gary Rowett linked with that. Don't really see that happening, given that his family are kind of based around the Midlands, and I think he'd like to go back there. But interesting to see what route they go down with that one, because there's a lot you can get out of that Bristol City side.
It feels a bit like the Mick McCarthy end of days situation at Ipswich, with kind of if they don't respect the job that I've done here over a long period of time, bit of an old school manager feeling a bit unloved that his contract situation was up in the air and having to kind of face questions about it all of the time, bit of a split amongst Bristol City fans, a lot sort of saying, you know, I saw there was a nice tweet from Pearson, a string of tweets this morning addressing the fans, and a lot of respect towards what he's done at that club, but ultimately on a bit of a shoestring budget. They've had to obviously sell players and work on sort of frees and loans and things. So it'd be interesting to see what happens with them next. But on my reckoning, that is 19 managerial changes since the start of pre-season across the 92, which is 20%. One in five have already changed manager already. And this feeds into what Mark Ashton has been saying, that Ipswich's super strength, their superpower this season, will be their stability. And that's proving to be the case at the moment, isn't it? I think that there is a lot to be said for that. So, yeah, and we're not even into November yet. We're not even into the heart of sacking season. So I'm sure there's going to be a load more to come over the next month or so.
Could it be those up the road? Them on the weekend. But enough about them. It's another game for Town this week, though. The 1st of November, we are now going to get into November, which is madness. Carabao Cup action. Boys, we're in the last 16 of the competition. We're taking on Premier League Fulham. Fulham actually beat Norwich in the previous round to get here. I think they beat Spurs on penalties also to get to this round. Of course, Town had to beat Wolves last time out. Coming from behind twice. Fulham in the last 16. They drew on the weekend 1-1 with Brighton. How are you feeling for this one, my friend?
Pretty laid back about it, really, because I think that sounds like a weird thing to say because we're getting into the deeper stages of the competition and it's a great opportunity, as you say, to get into the quarters. And then who knows? If the draw goes your way and what can happen there, as we saw with Ipswich back in 2011, getting to the semis and facing Arsenal, should be something sort of really excited by. But to me, it sort of feels like a nice little sideshow to what's going on with the league at the moment. I imagine it will be 10, 11 changes again, given the sort of the fixtures that are coming up. Obviously, the Rotherham game rearranged in there. The game's coming thick and fast. So a similar challenge to the Wolves one, really, in that Fulham are a side that have kind of yo-yoed between Prem and Championship, kind of stopped that pattern last year in finishing mid-table under Marco Silva. Multi-million pounds worth of signings across that squad. Lots of, you know, hundreds of international caps in there, but the same was true of Wolves, wasn't it, last time around, and Ipswich found a way to win that game. Another big challenge, but at Portman Road at the moment, with the momentum and the confidence and the feel-good factor that's going on, why can't Ipswich go and win again?
Yeah, AJ, you up for the cup, my friend? As I said, Stu mentioned, you know, if we win, we're in the quarterfinals, the last eight, which is just madness. And yeah, changes will be happening. That's what McKenna does, rotation. But that's why this squad is, you know, got great depth and players come in and they do well.
Yes and no. I think that you can't deny the kind of excitement around it because it's a big opportunity. And even though it feels like Town being in the Premier League, at least in the near future, does not feel like at all a far-fetched thing, everyone would love a trip to Chelsea, Man City, something like that, a really big tie. That being said, especially looking at when the quarterfinals will take place, Stu mentioned this to me and I then realised I had the week booked off, which is a slightly terrifying thought as well. But it comes in the middle of a horrid run in December where pretty much they'd go away to Middlesbrough and then have Watford on the Tuesday night, then they'd have Norwich as the Saturday 12:30. Then in between Norwich and Leeds would be the Carabao Cup game. Who knows what that could be? Man City away, where you'd probably need to put out a fairly strong team to avoid getting absolutely slaughtered. Then they'll go to Elland Road. And then the Tuesday after that, they're hosting Leicester before playing QPR. I think, again, just a few days after that. That is a lot. you want to go through. You don't want to lose games, and it's what they'll always try and stress. But it's definitely one of those where, if you're going to take the positives from going out of this competition, if Town do, that's going to be the biggest one, as it allows them a big chance to focus on the league and trying to maintain that cushion. Then as well, looking at Fulham, they went strong for their game against Norwich. There's a lot of big players that started that one. João Palhinha, Iwobi, Willian, Cameron Bassey, Issa Diop, all those kind of players that were ended up getting involved in that one. So you'd imagine that they'll probably bring a fairly strong side into that, but they'll also maybe have an eye on the fact that they host Manchester United in the 12:30 kickoff on Saturday. Flip side to that, 14th in the league, probably a little bit too good to go down. I don't see them threatening to go much higher than slap bang on kind of top half kind of stuff. This might be a nice opportunity for them as well. And Marco Silva thinking it'd be nice to go deep into a competition to make up for a season that could be fairly bland.
I've never understood why clubs in that sort of position, like you say, Fulham shouldn't be, probably won't be in danger of going down, aren't going to be challenging for Europe or anything like that. I know there's millions of pounds attached to every single place you finish in the Premier League, but why clubs like that don't give it a real go in the League Cup, I've never really understood. As you say, they did go reasonably strong against Norwich in the last round, and as much as Ipswich are looking at this thinking, cool, this is an opportunity, if you're Fulham, they'll be thinking exactly the same, because we've got Mansfield versus Port Vale and Exeter versus Middlesbrough in some of the other ties. So two of those will be definitely through to the next round. And if you're somebody like Fulham, you should be looking at this thinking, this is an opportunity for us potentially to go and get to a cup final, which doesn't happen very often for many clubs, certainly in this era where the big six or so kind of dominate. So a challenge for Ipswich, I would say, especially with lots of changes. But we've seen that lots of changes doesn't necessarily affect what Ipswich do. In previous years, when Mick McCarthy, for instance, made 10, 11 changes, it could make for a bit of a disjointed look to things. But the way they train under Kieran McKenna and the way everyone just sort of knows their roles seems to be pretty seamless, and they seem to roll out similar levels of performances. So I think one to enjoy fairly stress-free tomorrow night. If they win, amazing. If they don't, I don't think it will take us too long to kind of shrug that off and move on.
Wednesday night, Stu.
Wednesday, sorry.
don't tell people to turn up at Portman Road tomorrow.
I'm not getting used to this Wednesday thing now. It's strange.
A quick turnaround for Saturday, because as AJ, you mentioned, Fulham got Man United at 12:30, and of course we head to Birmingham on Saturday, so quick turnarounds. But enjoy it, ladies and gentlemen. Enjoy it as what it is, and we shall see if Town can progress. Well, boys, any other business? A very good pod, a long pod. We're literally getting into a full 90 minutes of football right here in this podcast. But any other business, Stu, from you?
No other business.
All right, fair play. AJ, any from you?
Keep enjoying the ride.
Love it, indeed. Now it's time to do the outro of outros. Thanks as ever for tuning in. Of course, shout out to our sponsors. First of all, Ginger Pickle, for your SEO needs, your marketing needs, Google Ads and all that sort of stuff. Check out Ginger Pickle, Tony Southgate, and the boys will help them out. I think he's recruited a third person to his team. So they're growing there. They're growing at Ginger Pickle, so check them out. And also Manscaped, use the code Coway. You get 20% off and free delivery for all your below the waist, all the other bits and bobs, your ear, your nose, your beard and all that sort of stuff. Check them out. And also, why not get some merch? It's Coway mugs, hoodies, hats, bottles, all the other bits and bobs. I think there's mouse mats as well. So if you want to spice up your office, get a mouse mat with KOA on it. There we go. Enjoy Fulham if you're going. If you're not, follow coverage with the boys and myself. We'll be there. Thanks again for tuning in. And see you next time on the Kings of Anglia Ipswich Town podcast.
Luxury Apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.